Guys, we're trying something a little fun and new. We had such a good time during our VR episode interacting with our listeners and getting their best definitely dying stories that we want to ask you guys to share any stories you have with us. So if you have any stories about either thinking you were sick and being wildly wrong, or actually getting sick, or a wild injury story. Basically, if you have any stories you would tell at a party, if it was a party full of people who didn't mind a downer story, give us a call at our Definitely Dying hotline. The number is 323-388-3879. I'll repeat it. And that's 323-388-3879. And you can leave your story on a little Google Voice answering machine. Yeah. And maybe we'll feature it on the show.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun?
Wouldn't that be fun? Hello, I'm Madeline Walter.
And I'm Ben Axelrad. And we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
Welcome to Definitely Dying, the podcast about health concerns, both real and imagined.
Because it's better to laugh about it together than cry about it alone.
I have a runny nose and an ingrown hair. And
my knee hurts.
My armpit kind of rush. Is that a rash? Out and I had Asian food and that makes me feel kind of sick. I might be lactose intolerant. I got a thing on the side of my ear.
I haven't cried in 3 years.
Hello and welcome back to all of our listeners and also to one of our hosts. Folks, Madeline's back. Hey, Madeline.
Hey, you have to say hola. I don't understand hola. It unless you say hola.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Estoy bien.
Bueno, mucho bueno. How is Mexico? Madeline, if you've been following the podcast closely, as I know that each and every one of you does, then you know that Madeline's been away the last 2 weeks. She was in Mexico on undisclosed business.
Yes. I was shooting something, but I think, just to be safe, I won't say what it is. And it was so great. I was in Mexico City, which is such a cool city.
Oh, nice.
It's really, really cool.
I have not been.
It's, well, first of all, way easier to get to than I thought. It's like, it was under 4 hours, a direct flight. And like, it was just, it's gorgeous. I like kind of want to move there.
It's good. The way you said way closer. You said like ways closer, but you said it like the app Waze.
It's ways closer. Yeah, like, man,
Madeline took Waze all the way down to Mexico City.
I took Waze all the way down to Mexico City.
I would say that North Carolina is the only other place besides here that I've ever heard you speak that glowingly about in terms of like a place that you could see yourself for longer than a vacation's amount of time. So Mexico City, it's making its way to the list of potential homes.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I would love to live in Mexico City.
What was it about it?
You know, it was like very, parts of it felt like very European. You know, like there were a lot of, like the old part of the city is like full of these like cobblestone squares and like these, you know, cobblestone streets and these incredible cathedrals, which is like, I think on the one hand, it's like, that's because like of colonialism, which is bad.
Sure.
We went to this one cathedral and it was like really beautiful. And they let you do this like crazy tour of the bells in the cathedral, which is like a big definitely dying no-no, because basically like they just take you on the roof of this crumbling cathedral and like anybody could trip and like fall to their death. But because it's like not the U.S., people trust you to be an adult. You're allowed to do it. And so we were like admiring this like beautiful architecture. But because like Ben and I don't really know Spanish, like I know like the most basic sort of school Spanish, we didn't realize until we met back up with my friend who lives there that the cathedral is literally made with the stones from the pyramids.
Whoa.
That like there, it was built on the site of a pyramid and they colonized and then like made the people take apart their pyramid and build a cathedral with those stones.
Whoa.
Which is like the biggest fuck you can imagine. And so like, so now I feel a little self-conscious about its European feel being a selling point of the city.
Sure,
but like before I knew that, like it was just like so beautiful. And it was like a Sunday night and it was like the city is just like full of people who are like outside sitting in these like, you know, outdoor cafes and like kids like running around these squares and playing soccer and like all these dogs just like running around. But like, you know, nice dogs.
Straight? Oh, not straight dogs.
No, not straight dogs. And then like there's like, you know, it's like this fun mix of like both this sort of kind of like very Spanish feel and then a lot of this like traditional Mexican feel. The food is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we went to like, you know, a couple great restaurants that were like that really traditional like food from that region, but then also like just like amazing seafood and amazing like this incredible sort of Italian place that was like really like interesting kind of fusion, you know, different meal, like this cool gnocchi with like this these like Mexican spices that I'd never had before. And then like all of the meals were like $100 for like five people.
Okay.
Because, you know, the dollar's very
strong.
Mexico.
Not good taco truck rates, but but for legitimate.
But for like would be like a five-star restaurant.
Which region were you in?
So we were in Mexico City, which is in a state that's also called Mexico City.
Okay.
So it's kind of central Mexico, and I don't, like, know how to
Food-wise, like, obviously, there's, like, Oaxacan, but...
I don't know what you call it. It was, like, a lot of meat with, like, mole or verde sauce. Like, it felt, like, not super dissimilar from maybe what would be Oaxacan.
It is Oaxacan.
Yeah, it might be. Like, but just a lot of, like... delicious like meats and sauces
hey, that's like that's right up your alley. You like a good dip. I remember that from your Spain
a
trip.
Good dip.
At the bars they would give you things to dip and you were very happy.
You know me so well.
I have a very keen memory for
a sauce and a dip.
You do.
I would dip a piece of paper or cardboard into a good sauce and dip and feel pretty good about it.
I've seen you do it. The part where you felt good about it, I don't recall that part, but I'm the same way. Anytime I stumble upon like a new what I would I don't know a better way to describe this than like a new within the hummus family,
yes.
I'm like so stoked, you know, like I can't think of what it's called, but it's like the red pepper version of hummus.
Have you ever been
to Momed, MOMED?
No, but I know it's a spicy one. Is it called spicy walnut dip? It's like red and a little spicy, and it's like hummus, but it's
very similar to hummus, and it is a little bit spicy, so maybe it's the same thing. I thought it was red pepper based, but I don't know. I'm not sure of that. And it's got a name that starts with an A. I could look it up, but
if I'm thinking of the same thing as you, it's like my favorite dip in the world. It's so good.
Me too. And they give you like a really healthy portion of it at this place, Momed, and honestly, it'll last a week.
That's
and
incredible.
I have no idea, like when you're served something that is that was made fresh, I never have any idea how long you can eat it.
Oh yeah,
but there's something about that type of food, like in the hummus family, which is inaccurate. It's a bad way to describe it, calling it the hummus family. But in that hummus family, like, you know, basically like something like a chickpea or whatever mixed with like oil and yada, yada, yada. It feels like those, I'm much less afraid of consuming those and then having them go bad.
Me too.
Like hummus, it seems like lasts a really, hummus, salsa, I guess salsa, dips in general, like seem to last quite some time.
Yeah, dips are safe. Think so.
Dips are safe.
Let us know if you've had any good or bad experiences with the food safety of dips. Yeah. Hashtag dips are safe.
Dip safety. This is a dip safety podcast.
Speaking of food safety, it was interesting to be in Mexico City specifically as a food poisoning hypochondriac because like people warn you so much about what you can and can't eat or drink, like, you know, because like you're not supposed to drink the water. And what I thought, I learned nobody in Mexico City drinks the water. I'm so dumb. I always thought you just shouldn't drink it if you're visiting. I thought if you live there, you're probably used to it. And my friend who lives there was like, no, it's bad. It'll make
parasitic,
you sick.
Right?
Well, it's also like the way they treat it, like, or, you know, the pipes. Like she was like saying there's like some like chemicals in it that are really bad. Like you're just, she was like, nobody drinks the water. And then also what I learned, this is nuts. You're also not supposed to eat raw vegetables. Which I thought it was because the raw vegetables are washed water, in water. But do you know why it is?
No.
Because in Mexico, a lot of the farming, like a lot of the agriculture, they use human sewage to fertilize it.
I thought that's what you were going
to
say, yeah.
I never knew that. And I also felt so dumb because I didn't even realize you could use human shit to fertilize. But of course you can. It's the same.
I think that happens in this country as well. And what I what, like the thing, I hadn't heard it necessarily as I hadn't heard it in the sense that they were using it purposely.
Yeah.
But instead that migrant workers in particular were given so few bathroom breaks that they were shitting in fields and then just that it's, you know, you shit on the ground and that's
and it gets in the ground and feeds a plant.
Yeah.
They do it intentionally. And weirdly enough, it doesn't. Like, I don't know why. It doesn't bother me too much.
I mean, it's the kind of thing you prefer not to know about.
Yes,
but
yes,
then, like,
exactly.
But the reality is that that animal shit isn't. What it was cow fur. It's cow shit usually that we're using, right, as fertilizer.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have any good things to say about cow shit either.
No.
At least I know what humans are eating.
Yeah. So it was interesting to, like, I basically ate almost not a single vegetable for a whole week because I was working. Like, normally I like always kind of have diarrhea, so I don't really care. But I was like, ugh, if I'm working, I like shouldn't, I should not like just have to, you know, shit every 15 minutes.
Right.
So I was like more careful than I usually am. And this is too much information, but I'll say it anyway. And so for nearly 5 days, I really honestly couldn't poop at all.
You were constipated.
Yeah. Because I was only eating like chicken and tortillas and rice and like nothing green. Take that, stereotypes about what happens to you in Mexico. I got constipated in Mexico. Spreading awareness all over.
That's what they call Madalena's revenge.
I know, and it happens to me in Mexico and in Ohio.
what we refer to as the Mexico of the North.
Should we start the podcast?
Yeah, let's start the podcast.
A great guest for you today. He is a director, he's a writer, he's a performer. You've seen him at UCB with his amazing three-man improv team Convoy, who you can see at UCB Franklin every Thursday night at 11. He's directed a bunch of stuff, including episodes of Children's Hospital and CISO's Bajillion Dollar Properties, which comes back really soon and is so funny. Guys, everybody in the studio, welcome Alex Fernie.
Yay.
Hello.
Alan, you really nailed that.
Thank you so much. Ben was going to do the intro, and then he asked me to do it.
Bailed at the last minute.
Yeah, I was really nervous I was going to mess it up. And just like,
no, you were effortless. You were effortless.
Thank you. That can be said of no other thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, I had a very Madeline-esque panic attack right before it, it happened. And she stepped up and she handled like a pro. So, Alex, we like to start this off with the same question for all of our guests. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think about death?
I think probably a fair amount. Probably, like, not necessarily even negatively, but probably, like, scale from 1. 10 is thinking about it all the time. 1 is, like, just you told me about it for the first time. I'd say probably 6 or 7.
6 or 7?
Okay, cool.
Yeah. But you say not negatively, just sort of as an abstract thing?
Yeah,
as
sometimes it's like, oh, boy, I really hope I don't die. But other times it's just sort of thinking about it and without that dread or fear more as a concept.
Yeah. Do you conceptually think about it? Like, do you think of death or do you think of dying more, would you say?
You know, it depends on what kind of mood I'm in. Like, I think of it conceptually, probably more so since we've been doing this podcast. And then I think about it I hope I don't die, only in situations where I'm like nervous that a decision that I've made or will make will result in my death. You know, like, you know, I don't know, going to a shady looking campsite or like, you know,
which
crossing
you
a street.
A lot,
yeah. I'm always at a shady campsite. Yeah, I'm going camping. I'm really very predictable. I'm like going camping this weekend. So that's where my mind's at. Is like, will I feel safe camping?
Yeah.
I think I will.
Have you encountered any shady campers?
You know, I haven't, but my little brother was camping maybe like a year ago. He was like doing a cross-country road trip, and a guy came to his campsite. He was like with a few buddies and like really overstayed his welcome and was like kind of shady to begin with. And then he started being like, I got some knives in my car. You want to see? Like, oh. And then he like went to his car. He like kept talking about like different people he like hurt or injured, and then
I think he sounds fun.
So why'd you even go camping if you didn't want to make new friends?
You know what? You guys are right. Yeah.
When I first, before I moved out here, probably 9 months before I moved out here, Alex Berg and I came out just to visit for a mm-hmm. little bit. We were walking down Hollywood Boulevard, and a guy was walking towards us. And, like, it was one of those things, we just clocked him mm-hmm. from, like, two blocks away. It's like, oh, I hope he turns.
Yeah.
And then he didn't, and he kept coming. And he was, like, just, like, stalking forward, like, pure. Ooh. And I was like, oh, what is this? And he's right in the middle of things, so there's no way to get around him. And he comes right up to us, and he goes, and just looks at us and goes, you guys like knives?
Oh, no.
And, I mean, there were other people around. He came right as like, you guys. And I remember going like, there's a fucking wrong answer to this. Yeah. And I don't know which one's wrong.
Because
no could get me stabbed, but yes could get me like, well, how about this?
Oh, yeah.
And we just kind of like, no, we don't like knives. And he just stormed away. But it was this flash of like, oh, no. What is this interaction?
And sounds he like, was like, another person who doesn't like knives. I'm never going to make a friend who shares my interests.
I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
He was going to do the thing where he cuts a penny in half for you and sells you steak knives. Yeah, I would probably buy knives off of that guy to get him to go away. It seems like maybe the approach that Cutco is taking is just a little bit too friendly, a little bit too sane-minded
for their audience. For no.
When you do think about death in a negative way, like how to, like, is it, or when you think about like, I don't want to die, do you find that it's more when like you're in a really nice moment and you're like, man, it'd be sad if this was over? Or is it more when you're like fearful of dying?
I almost never think about like, hey, something bad's going to happen to me today. Even if I'm somewhere where like where I'm uncomfortable or I feel danger, like I never go there with that where I'm like, oh, someone's going to attack me or whatever. When I think about it, it tends to be like in like on like the depressing side, the depressed side of it, I'll think about it sort of being like, oh, I'm going just in a general, I'm going to die before I do anything like I'm proud of, and that bums me out. I'll think about that.
Do you still feel like that?
Oh yeah.
But you've done so much to be proud of. Do you not?
That's up to him if he's proud of
it.
He's done a lot of stuff you'd be proud of.
You know what? That's a good distinction. Has that been a constant feeling as you've accomplished more? Like does it? Is the bar always moving?
I think when I was younger, I didn't think about it as much. Maybe because I was younger, and so it didn't occur to me.
Sure.
And now as you get older, I think about that more of being like, that's probably my most frequent one. The thing that I think about is like, ah, shit. Like, I'll sometimes, you know, think about like, I'll have a cough and I'll be like, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and but I think that's kind of normal. Sure. Just being like, I don't know what this cough is. No one around me was sick. I'm dying.
Yeah.
And then I'll think about it sometimes in the context of like, this is also like the darker bummer version of it, of just sort of like, you know, my wife Deborah and being like, oh, that'd be horrible. You know, like I'll think about death in that way.
For sure.
Those are the ways I tend to think about it in like as it pertains to me. And then I'll think about it in sort of like that non-negative way. Yeah. In a more abstract way, and that doesn't spook. That's sort of like, what is it?
When you do think about, though, like, you know, passing before you've accomplished things, do they tend to be more like career based, or is it things like, you know, like yesterday I met Alan McLeod and Stacey Dasho's new baby, and I did have like one of those moments where I was like, I don't know if I'd be any good at this, but I would like I would like the chance to give it a shot, or is it career based stuff that is going to be more subjective?
It's often, I guess it would often be career based, but I don't even necessarily think of it maybe as like the way people normally use career.
Sure.
So much as like, I think if I had done something that was just as 100% like, I'm 100% on board, like I'm super proud of this, this is something I made, and it isn't like a career, there was no money or it didn't make me famous or whatever, I think that would feel okay to me.
Like, can you think of an example? Like, what could you give me an example of a thing you could accomplish and then you would feel not scared to die?
Yeah, what will defeat death?
I mean, I suppose if I knew, I would do it. like, I think that, like,
let's try to answer. Yeah, yeah,
suicide. Yeah.
Like, that is, I think, because it isn't. I guess you could put a lot of in career stuff just because of this industry, but I don't think of it like, I want to be famous. Right, I want to,
yes, of course.
So much as just being like something that I've made that I won't throw a zillion caveats at you.
Right, right.
Yes, that like feels like, like, oh, this is, like this just hits that sweet spot of feeling like a, like my, like your thing.
Yeah, and you know, when I think I've probably talked about this on some other podcast when they've asked about Convoy, but the like I might talk about it on yours 8 years ago, whatever that was. But the, you know, I think a lot of the way I look at it comes from when I moved out here, like 4 or 5 months after I moved out here, like the fourth member of the group died. And he was 22 and he had a heart attack, and that was like so sudden, and my first real experience with death, like my grandfather had died a few months earlier, but that was also, he's a grandfather and he's old.
Yes.
And, you know, like that was sort of like, oh, this is sad, but also that's like, how it works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when Matt died, that probably, in ways I can't even fully like recognize in myself, probably locked in certain views into my brain, because that was a super hard time, and processing that at 22 was very, very tough.
Yeah. And this was back when you were at college, or this had you
right
had already
after.
Moved out?
We
here?
Just moved out. We moved out in August. He was a year ahead, and we had started like working together and performing together. And we moved out in August, and he died in the beginning of December.
Holy shit!
So like that was, I think, probably part of what that is. Because I'll still, I mean, that was in 04. That was 13 years ago, and I still go like, oh, how different. Because I think he probably would have done pretty well for himself, and like how different would my life be, and you know, the people I work with's life be if that hadn't happened. And so probably if you wanted to like, you know, connect some dots,
sure,
it goes back to that, I would guess.
Yeah. That's, I can't even imagine that being, I mean, really being any age, but specifically being like in your early 20s and having that happen.
Yeah, it was tough. And especially having just moved out here, the time I was just saying when Berg and I came, it was the only other time I'd ever been to LA, and Matt had convinced Berg and I to move out.
Oh, wow.
And we're like, oh yeah, we'll do like, we'll write together and we'll perform together and stuff. So that was, I would probably have ended up in New York.
Okay.
Or gone back to school. I would have gone maybe to like grad school for history or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he convinced both of us, and Berg too. I think Berg would have gone to grad school probably. And he sort of convinced us to go like, well, you know, come out and give it a shot.
Yeah.
And so we did. So like that was the reason we were out here more or less as well.
Yeah. This guy changed your life.
Yeah.
He really did.
I think so, probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was that like? I mean, also we don't have to talk about it because it's like so sad and dark, but like time, like what was like the day-to-day like of processing and coping that like with that at the
It was
at the time.
Hard. I'm pretty sure I punted it for about 6 months.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Looking back, like I would say that happened when I was 22. A couple years, I think I was in a pretty weird place, and I think it was when it first happened because of the world. I was not certain it wasn't a bit.
Really?
Yeah, when I was told, because I was like, "This is like," and so it was, you know, very hard. But it was that sort of like, you know, we had a lot of friends. We got together, and you know, and on the day, you know, we kind of split up. He was also getting married in like 2 weeks.
Oh my god!
So like, we had to like call a bunch of people who weren't in LA, and I kind of in sort of situations like that. Not that there are a ton, but like bad situations, I'm pretty okay at going okay. The task at hand, take care of it.
Yeah.
And it kind of, I think, extended into the next spring for me. Mm-hmm. And as sad as it was, you know, like, dealing with it. But, like, in that next spring was where it kind of, like, cracked pretty hard. And, like, I had this shitty job. And, like, I just stopped going. I just didn't show up one day and just never went back. And that was a few months after that. Like, that was, I think I didn't really deal with it until that time.
Yeah.
And those ones are particularly hard. I mean, you're talking about a 22-year-old who died in a way that we would usually attribute with someone much older. Mm-hmm, I've had several people in my life die of drug overdoses. And as sad as it was, it sort of feels like that's a youthful death. Like, sometimes there's a mistake with, you know, I remember when I was in high school, or maybe I was only in middle school, there was a kid a few years older than us who was on the track team, and he had a heart attack. He died running. And you sort of realize, like, no, this is a random series of occurrences that will come to make sense after the fact. But we can't really explain just about anything that's happening.
And young, I feel like with younger people, you know, it's often like a preventable tragedy.
Yeah.
Or something you saw coming.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times, you know, young people will get disease and it will kill them. But it's rarely a... lightning strike.
Yes.
Unless it's some other thing that, well, this was the other problem that's factoring in. And that doesn't make any less of a tragedy, but like, this was weird because it was like, people had known, he had had a minor heart attack before and been on this medicine, and they basically, you're in the clear.
Yeah.
And then they were just wrong. Mm-hmm. But like, that made it weird too, because there wasn't a lot of, you know, it wasn't what you'd expected. Like, hey, okay, which one of this group is going to be the first one to die? And will be in their early 20s of a heart attack?
Right.
Like,
Not even like a car accident where it's totally sudden. But, you know, sometimes you can place blame in those instances. Yeah. But also it's just like, this is... The cars are huge and they move very fast.
We've all thought about you know what? Every time we get in the car, there's a chance we might die in a car. And we all know that. That's part of our compact with the world.
Yeah, there's like a pocket in your brain for that to fit into. Yep. Right. Yeah.
But with the heart attack, it sort of seems like you don't want to wish it on anyone, but you sort of feel like when you watch those like Larry the Cable Guy commercials for like where he's eating like chili dogs left and right, and he's like found a pill. It's like, you should have overcome your heartburn, but like there has to be ramifications for that lifestyle. And then to come to realize that like, no, those are just sort of like, that's one of the possible ramifications for being alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yikes.
So can you like put your finger on other sort of echoes that experience has in the way that you live your life even today? Like,
I think for a while, I think it did a few things. I think I think it kind of eventually coming out of that a few years later, probably. I think I was kind of like, okay, you know, I want to be, I think honestly, maybe, I don't know if this phrasing is right, but I think honestly it ended up making me more confident in some good ways and some bad ways in terms of being like, I think I probably have less time to deal with shit I don't want to deal with.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that translates a lot to career where like, I've joked with people on a project I was just working on where like, I'm very comfortable saying no to people on things and just sort of being like, no.
Yeah.
And I think it has to have impacted like my thinking of it, which is like, I'm not going to waste time talking about this.
Sure.
This is the way it's going to be. Yeah. We're going to do this. Unless you have a good case to be made. And I think that probably affects it. It probably comes from like, oh man, like that was fast. So, you know, moving along.
Yeah. So all the members of Convoy, so you guys, including the fourth, Matt, you said was his name?
Mm-hmm.
So you guys all met in Ithaca.
At Vassar.
Or Vassar. Yeah, sorry, so the birthday boys were Ithaca. Yeah, Vassar, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, and then the three of you, so Todd moved out separate from the rest of you?
Yeah, Todd and Matt were a year older, so they were, and Todd's from here, so he basically, when he graduated, he moved back out to where his folks were, and Matt had moved, and Matt was from Massachusetts, and then when Berg and I graduated that summer, we drove out.
Yeah, okay.
And then we started, you know, performing, at UCB wasn't open out here at that point, but we started performing at like Iowa West, and that's where we started doing shows.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like, what would you say... A lot of improv troupes that originated in college don't survive when they make it out to like sort of the professional ranks. Do you feel like to some extent that like that there is a bond there that's maybe greater than a lot of teams have?
Yeah, I think so. I think you know, Berg and I were living together, and I think the we were roommates for years and years and years, and I think probably I'm not sure why we were able to keep working together. Mm-hmm. Actually, if I think about it, like we're all pretty honest with each other and don't get and pretty thick skinned, mm-hmm. probably most with each other.
Yeah.
And early on doing those shows like at IO West and stuff, one of the things that I think helped was one might be that we were like a subset of these improv group, this mm-hmm. improv group mm-hmm. at college. So it wasn't like, hey, this college right. improv group is going to do this. But I think that helped because we kind of formed our thing. We're all, I think, even for people who do, you know, improv comedy, pretty serious people. So we would take it pretty seriously. Yeah. And I think that kind of helped. And I think when we moved out to L.A. and we started performing at UCB or at I.O. and then eventually UCB, what we did, we carved a niche out for ourselves kind of accidentally. And I think mm-hmm. because we had come from Vassar, which is, you know, bleeding lefty, you know, smarty pants.
Yeah.
Like, that's what the school prides itself on and the people there pride themselves on. That was sort of how we, what the sort of stuff we learned would go over well with the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was something that maybe people weren't fully doing when we started performing, just sort of the... We don't try to be like, we're the smarty pants ones. We're doing a lot of history references. But it's just what our knowledge base is.
Yeah.
And it's what we find funny. And, like, that was – people liked that.
Yeah. You guys weren't like, we have to shelf this and do some real blue stuff.
And I think that was – helped us survive because we were able to, like, kind of accidentally create a little voice of who we are. And in the same sort of way in sketch, the Birthday Boys.
Right.
You know, I could – probably you could give me like 3 mask sketches and one of them be Birthday Boys. I bet I could pick the Birthday Boys sketch. I think we kind of came to LA with the germ of what we would be already. And that was helpful.
So you're a self-proclaimed pretty confident person. Do you think of yourself as also like, do you have like a lot, how'd you rate your like anxiety level? Do you think of yourself as an anxious person or like, are you any kind of hypochondriac?
I'm not like a hypo. I get pretty anxious. It's almost always, around big decisions.
Oh, okay.
I get really anxious, like seeing the like sort of choice tree branch off.
So that
will make me really anxious. Yeah. And then if stuff stacks up, like, I tend to work as a director and that makes me very, it's very stressful.
Oh.
It's like the most stressful thing in the world.
Of all the decisions?
I think probably. Also, I don't like, you know, it was kind of an accidental career.
Really?
Yeah. I studied history and it happened because I got hired by Funny or Die. And at the time there was no sort of oversight of Funny or Die and you had to direct your own stuff.
So
I kind of like used my 3 years there to teach myself the bare minimum of what it is. So like there's still like a fair amount of like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know why you've hired me, but I hope this isn't the one where I truly make you regret it. So like that gives me great anxiety, and then big decisions will give me a real harsh anxiety.
Like choosing between multiple things, like
I'm trying to think of like a good example. Even like when, you know, even once I knew I was going to propose to Deborah, my wife.
Yeah,
I had real anxiety about that for a while.
She says no.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I knew she was not going to say no.
You're a very confident person.
Like, that was like that stuff will stress me out, and it sort of stacks. So when it's a bunch of things, I'll go like, why do I feel terrible? And I'll go, oh, I'm having an anxiety attack. But I tend to be, I'm a kind of heady person as well, so I can normally go, oh, wait. I see what it is. What? Why did I wake up in a cold sweat? Why am I freaking out?
Right.
Yeah.
No. Oh, it's because I have like to finish the script into. Oh, okay. And I can normally shunt it aside.
Oh, okay.
Once I've done that moment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah. Do little decisions get you? Like, I'm a bad decision maker, and sometimes, like, I'll get sort of, like, paralyzed by even, like, the basic decision of, like, where is a good place to, like, go to dinner, because it's like,
almost every day I nearly have a meltdown trying to decide what I'll have for lunch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But that's just because I hate lunch and I resent that we have to have it.
Well, you don't have to. You could eat a bar or drink a drink.
That's not going to do it. You know what I mean? Like, that's not good.
No, I've come to realize with this podcast that, like, if I don't eat a snack when he leaves, that second interview is going to go very poorly. And it's just there's no way around it.
You're mad. We're humans who need fuel.
It makes me furious. And like dinner, I like because, like, you can go to a nice dinner. And also, like, what am I doing at 6:30 or 7?
Yeah, it's like a nice little like cherry on top of a day. But
lunch,
I'm
like, I would much rather just be able to do whatever I'm doing, be at work or be it like I'm reading comic books.
Right. Yeah,
I don't want to have a mediocre salad.
Yeah,
but I need to. Otherwise, I'm gonna have a headache in 3 hours.
No, it's very true. And it seems like if you didn't have to take lunch, then you could stop working an hour earlier.
Yeah.
Like, that's sort of the beauty. I always try to, like,
resent it.
Truck through
lunch.
All parts of the day. Like, I remember, working, like, shitty jobs, and they would give you, like, an hour off for whatever. It's like you don't actually – when you have a shitty job, you don't work at traditional – like, you don't work the 8 to 5 where, like, your traditional lunch comes in. You work, like – 5 until 2 in the morning, and then you have to sort of, like, just find an hour in there that you will count as your lunch. And I would do anything to avoid having to take my break if it meant that I could leave earlier.
Yeah.
Just because in general, what we're saying is, like, I'm going to take a break so I can keep doing this for longer. And that is an angering sort of feeling.
Yeah, and it's like, not a break if I'm here.
Right, yeah.
And even on set, like, if you're shooting something, like, great, get half an hour lunch or whatever you have, but I would so much rather not have to eat and be like, oh, I can go take, like, a nap for 45 minutes, or I can just do whatever. Like, that will lower my stress level. Like, I like being alone quite a bit and being in silence quite a bit.
Oh,
and so, like, in a perfect world for that, I would go and, like, sit somewhere or read or nap, and that would probably prep me better for the next 6 hours.
This honestly feels like a fixable problem. I feel like you could eat fast and then go take.
But then you got, like, it's because it's so, like, set, it's so rude to be like,
such
goodbye.
It's such a weird thing. You don't want to be like that asshole.
There's always people who want to ask you questions. I can't really.
Now, I get that in the class that I teach, where like the break will come along, and the break is really there so that I can stop speaking for like 15 minutes. But no, everyone wants to ask a very specific question that, you know, maybe you're built the same way that I am. When someone asks me a question that they deem to be very simple, very easy to answer, I'm going to take the real long route on that one. I'm going to think about this in a way that it did not occur to you before you asked this question. I'm going to make you regret asking the question, in fact.
I hate figuring out, like, I hate on set that, like, it's this, like, horrible new renaissance of, like, the lunchroom phenomenon of, like, where do you sit?
Yeah.
I hate it. I never know where to sit. And, it's probably weirder because, like, I will only, like, you know, I'll, like, shoot a commercial or I'll shoot, like, a day on a thing. So it's, like, I'm never on something long enough to, like, get into a groove of, like, it being normal to, like, sit with certain people. And I have so much anxiety about, like, where to just sit down.
It's always different
cultures
too, per set. So it's not even like you're like, oh, I figured it out.
No.
Because
like some people, it's like on like a lot of commercials, a lot of times the clients like never want you to sit with them.
No. Yeah.
Like they want, and that's easier, I think, because it's like cut and dry and simple. But then sometimes it feels like they want to chat and it's like fun for them to talk. And then it's like this like debate of like, is this so weird for me to sit down or do I seem standoffish if I like sit with like, just like, the makeup people or whatever.
I normally like it's always I tend to think that like when I'm working, when I'm directing something, you know, actors often they tend to come together and they'll sit together frequently.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I'll sit with them at lunch a decent amount of time. But I'm also I really believe like they should bond and they should all have their thing and they should all hang out. And I think like sometimes, depending on the shoot, me being there changes that
chemistry. Yeah, yeah.
And so I'll like actively be like, okay, I want them to have their club. And I actually do a similar thing with like if I'm like coaching a Herald team or something.
Oh yeah.
I'll always be like, no, it's you. And then like I'm a hanger on. That's it. Yeah. This is your group and I'm just trying to help you, but like I'm not gonna probably hang with you because I think don't worry about me.
I
want you guys to really do this thing.
To be on like good behavior.
Almost like a documentarian.
Like, I think it does change. You know, turn around and I go, okay, now I can tell you to do something, even if it's like an improv coach. Wait, I'm ready to rehearsal. Or and like, now I think that's just a different.
Agreed.
Yeah.
There should be no hierarchy among them, and so I don't want to introduce my different role to them.
I think that's really smart.
Yeah.
And but then it also ends up like, huh?
Well, then who do you
know.
Say? Well, yeah,
the grips don't seem psyched about me walking towards them. What's the AD doing?
Yeah, it makes me so anxious.
Yeah. I would imagine that like that might be an easy balance for you in the sense that that you obviously, you know, like you said, you didn't come into directing from the crew mentality. Like I've been talking to so many people lately who don't think of themselves as performers or entertainers or creative. They think of themselves as being on, you know, the behind the camera type.
Yeah.
Or, what's the yeah. And it would seem like you came to this from a performer's perspective, but in directing, the majority of the time you're going to be working with crew people.
Yeah.
It seems like you could probably balance.
It's definitely like, because I come from that UCB and even specifically improv, which is so collaborative. And that's what I like about it was you build something together. That's very much how I approach it. I think the main reason people hire me is because I'm pretty okay with actors. I think it's probably not a coincidence. A lot of times the shows and stuff I get hired on are like creator driven. Hired me to do NTSF. He also happens to be the star of NTSF. I think that's probably a part of it. And like my approach to I truly don't understand the approach that a lot of times people take that's like, I'm the director and this is me, you know, like, and so I'm in charge of everything, where I'm much more, I think, trusting of like, this is what I might say no to you, but this is what we're going for.
Yeah.
And this is what we need. And then you take care of it and you take care of it and we'll build this thing together, because that's how it has to be. TV or movie has to be made. You can't do it alone.
No.
And I think that's the fun of it.
Yeah.
But it's weirdly rare, you know, even when I'm in stuff as an actor or whatever. There's a lot of like, you see that a lot of like, oh, the director is the sort of king of it. And I was like, it should be more, you know, I don't know wardrobe like the wardrobe person does. I'll tell them what the general thing is and they should make some choices and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
You're sort of planning out a general aesthetic, and then people who are more equipped to make micro decisions should make micro decisions for themselves.
And also that's probably a saving for me of being like, I can't worry about every parachute.
It's true.
Yeah.
Like I'll know if something's wrong and they'll go, hey, those are crazy. but like that's.
Yeah. Well, and that's ultimately your job.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, that looks crazy. Or like, I can see the whole sort of forest. So like that thing looks weird. Right. But not to like micromanage.
Yeah. And I think like, and this, I think, probably connects to sort of like the health stuff you guys talk about, or like in terms of mental health. I also feel like I might be wrong. You know what I mean?
I truly,
I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, I don't think I have any idea how people see me or perceive me.
Oh
interesting.
I truly don't.
What do you mean?
Like, I just don't think I know. I know sometimes I'm like, I think you're like, I think sometimes people are intimidated by me.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly around here, around UCB.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe, but like, I don't know. I don't try. I don't know why. you know what I mean? Like I don't know. I wouldn't be able to say like, oh, I think these people are. You know what I mean? And I think it's really hard to judge how people see yourself. And I know I can't. Like, I have no idea. I have no idea if people are like, oh, he's a nice guy, or like, no, he's a dick. And I'm like, I could see both. Like, I think probably I could see an argument being made for both. Or like, I just really have no idea. And I think that translates probably to work stuff too, where I'm like, oh, I don't know. Is this do you think I'm the pits, or is this like a good thing? And I can't tell because I know you're not. They're not going to tell me.
Do you care?
Yeah, I care.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How much time do you spend thinking about, like, what do these people think I'm a jerk?
Probably new people, probably quite a bit.
Really?
Yeah. And then a general sense, probably quite a bit. I shot a movie in the fall, and we're finishing up now, and it's like I have no idea. I know there are people there that because it was really a tough thing and I got angry a couple times, but like I have no idea. It's like, do people see that as being like I was being a dick?
Right.
Was it a fun experience? And I really can't tell. Do people think I had no idea what I was talking about?
I think that tends to be the big fear a lot of the time, that the actual manifestation of confidence, this idea that, like, all these people decided that I'm a fraud? And then I think, you know, at least the older I get, but I feel like it's been pretty consistently the case. I don't necessarily care if other people are going to want to continue to be friends with me, but I am often concerned that people have decided that I'm not worth working with again.
Yeah.
And that feels like there are going to be occasions, like I've talked about it on this podcast, like there are going to be occasions where I am an asshole, and I would like to think those are the outliers.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If I do the sort of thing that makes me seem unprofessional, or I think often in my case, like maybe a little bit hotheaded, that's my big fear. And maybe I think with me, like I think my dad has a bit of a temper. Mm-hmm. And so anytime that I see myself acting in that respect, is there like someone in your life that you maybe emulated as a director early?
No, I'm probably pretty similar to my mom. Like I have very little temper. Mm-hmm. When it goes, it goes.
Oh.
But I have an exceptionally long fuse. And what triggers me is when I see, honestly, like, people treating other people poorly for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when I get really impatient when I feel like time is being wasted.
Mm. In everything or when you're working?
Probably everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really think like that really upsets me. And then, you know, occasionally sometimes stuff like, you know, on this movie, there was a day where someone just fucked up and like we lost a whole morning because of this fuck up, and I get very, very angry.
Yeah, yeah.
But like in general, it doesn't, it takes a lot to get me there. And so I would guess people see me as pretty aloof. I think probably my, what I think is just, I'm very comfortable being quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that aloofness, I would also guess maybe that can be perceived as arrogance. I don't think it is. It's literally me just being quiet and sometimes slightly like, oh, I don't think that person wants to talk to me, so I'm not going to. And I know that there's people, times it's looked like I've blown people off because I've been like, oh, well, I bet they're okay. Yeah. I don't want to go there because that'll be weird. Yeah. I'm certain I do that.
Yeah.
Like categorically, like where does your head go when you're in like Fernie time, when you're just like by yourself? Oh. Like, are you thinking about the work itself? Are you not thinking whatsoever?
No, I tend to just like go off. If I'm not like reading or something, then I tend just to like literally just follow train of thought.
Really?
Yeah. Like I'll just like, this sounds like the most least specific answer in the world, but like I'll literally just sort of think and then bounce around and see where that leads me. And that helps sort of ground me. It's also the time where, like I was saying before, I will go, what am I upset about?
Mm-hmm.
Should I be?
Right, yeah. Right.
And a good amount of time, it's like, no, I shouldn't be. I'm stressed out because, you know, I have these pitches next week, and then I'll go like, what am I stressed out about? It's going to happen next week no matter what, and either it'll go good or bad.
Right.
And then I'll calm myself down.
That's an incredible skill for self-soothing. Yeah.
It's very helpful.
Have you ever had any times when you, like, weren't able to come, like when you're it like your anxiety got the best of you, or like you weren't able to calm yourself down?
Yeah. Every now and then I will have a straight up anxiety attack.
Like full physical, like panic.
Like
can't
I will
breathe.
Start, I'll think I'm sick and I'll start and I'll and my heart will be racing and then I'll normally catch on to what's happening.
Oh,
and
interesting.
I think it was probably within the last 5 years I realized that's what this was. It's pretty rare.
Yeah. Like once a year or?
You know what? It depends on the external stimulus.
Sure.
So like sometimes I bet last year when I was doing this movie that took a year off my life. I had multiple. You know what I mean? That is, but it's always something outside. I tend not to whip myself up too much. It tends to be there's a real stressor that's pushing on me, and I haven't dealt with it properly.
Yeah.
And sometimes I can go like, great, I will deal with this thing. And sometimes it's just sort of like, well, you know, this too shall pass.
Right. Yeah.
Have you had any, do you have any like hypochondriac experiences that you've had?
I have a general sense where like I will be like, death, I'm pretty sure I was like, oh, I think I will like, I'm like convinced myself I will die of something that was preventable that wasn't caught. Like
really?
I was 100% certain. I'm like, that's how it's going to go. So I'll be like, so that leads me to going like, I don't know. When is this going to be? I get a headache, even though I've had migraines for decades.
This is something different.
Be like, nope,
headache?
Take a couple Excedrin and it goes away and I don't have it again for
Why
five
do you
months.
Think that?
I have no idea. I think it just makes sense to me of being like, I don't drink.
Yeah.
You know, I don't do drugs. I don't do a lot of stuff that is, you know, would put me, you know, I've never smoked. So there's all these things where I'm like, well, I don't have to worry about those.
Yeah.
Right.
So
everything preventable.
Yeah.
You've prevented.
So I absolutely should be more active. I know I should work out and stuff. But like, so I'm like, well, I can't worry about that. So I think it's honestly my human brain going, what can you worry about?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you don't know that you're breathing in this. And then, you know, like,
oh yeah.
So I'll do that. And then the thing I was telling you about before, the one of the most embarrassing things that's ever happened to me, this is a longish story, I had sort of convinced myself that I'd found a lump on like one of my balls and one of my testicles because sometimes you just happen to touch your own testicles when you're a man. And I was like, oh shit, this, and I like thought about it, and this is what I do is like normally I go like, I will be embarrassed to go to a doctor and have them go, what are you talking about? This is nothing.
Yeah.
Like, so I will put that off. Which is a very unhealthy way to think. But eventually I was like, no, because I know this was probably like 7 years ago, and I was like, I know that this is for people, guys my age.
Yeah.
This is a big one.
Yeah.
I should do this.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, and I made an appointment, and I go in and I see this doctor, and like he kind of like pokes around. He's like, you know what? I think this is nothing. He's like, I think this is a calcium deposit. And I was like,
calcium deposit?
Oh, like a faucet? Like, but I was like, okay. And he's like, but to be safe, let's do an ultrasound to check it out. And I was like, yeah, that's great.
I was like, this is great.
Basically, you said what I wanted. So he's like, okay, go upstairs to this other floor and you'll go. And I go up and I'm waiting. And then the nurse comes to take me in. And the first thing that happened was like, in my mind, I feel like the nurse was much younger and cuter than I thought. And I got instantly like, oh no, this is bad. And she leads me down a long hallway that ends in a T intersection. At the end of the T, like right, the hallway leads to this door and then it goes right and left. There's this door and she opens it and it was absolutely at one time a closet. I think it was smaller than the room we're in now. And there was a bed. Like a doctor's thing. And then this ultrasound machine.
Yeah.
And then like shelves and some cupboards.
Yeah.
And she goes, okay, I'm going to duck out. Take off your pants and underwear. Leave your shirt on. and then we'll do this. And she was so specific about leaving the shirt on.
Weird.
And I was like, that's weird.
That's weird.
Also, I would have been more comfortable if I was just totally naked.
Honestly, I think nothing weirder than no clothes but a shirt.
The fucking worst. Like
only
socks
a shirt,
and a shirt as a dude.
No, that's like, honestly, that is like X-rated disgusting.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
And so like, I was like, okay. And then she comes back in and she goes, okay, now lie down on the thing. And she rolled up like a little like hand towel.
Yeah.
And she's like, you have to put this between your legs and basically like rest your balls on it. so that she can do this ultrasound thing.
Which is like a wand?
It's like a wand, yeah. It looks almost like a barcode scanner.
Just scanning your balls.
Yeah, just scanning the balls. And she turns off the light so she can see the screen, which also makes this worse. Oh, so I mean, like, this dark closet with a shirt, like, just kind of lying there.
Yeah.
And she puts this cold jelly on and, like, has to do it. Oh. And she's, like, just sort of, like, going around. And it goes on for fucking ever.
Like how long?
It's, like, 15 minutes of just dead silent, literally just rubbing this thing around my balls. I'm just lying there and we're not talking.
15
And every
minutes?
Now and then she'll go, like, oh, okay. And she's poking forward and she's like, okay, well, she goes, I don't see anything after this. I was like, great. She goes, now we have to do it standing up because sometimes stuff can shift around. I was like, oh, okay.
Wait, like in your balls they can shift around?
Apparently.
Yeah, okay.
And so what standing up becomes is I have to stand up and she's like, and you have to hold your penis up against your stomach so that it's not in the way. And I was like,
I've never heard of this happening.
It's horrible.
To anybody.
This is horrible. And I also have to clench this rolled towel between my thighs so that like my testicles are resting on this rolled towel and I'm holding my dick just like staring into middle space as she's on one of those little doctor like wheelie stools like dick level just like doing this thing pitch black and she's doing this and she's like poking around and it's horrible and this is going on for a couple minutes and so if you can picture the way this is a very small room and I'm standing dead center in it and the only light is from behind me on the screen and this is going on again dead silence and the door fucking swings open and I'm looking down this very long hallway that's full of people coming and going and she's off so she's not seen and I'm just blasted by this light as I'm holding my dick just in a shirt and this other nurse comes in, no reaction, just comes in and I like kind of shift around and like I make eye contact with people and to be fair to my nurse, she goes, what are you doing? And the nurse who came in, and I don't know what was happening, it seemed like she was having a bad day too because she just goes, I need a bucket and goes to a cupboard and gets a bucket and then slams the door. And I was like, that was horrible. Like, that felt so terrible. And the nurse apologizes and everything. And it continues and goes on. And she goes, okay. And I'm, like, mortified. And like, at the end, I have to use a towel to, like, wipe all this jelly off my junk. And then she's like, okay, we'll call you tonight with the results. But I don't think it'll be anything. I was like, okay, great.
Yeah.
And so I get a call that night from this place.
Yeah.
And they're like, our computer crashed and we lost all the data. You have to come back in and do it again. It was the worst. I went back in and did it again.
Was it the same nurse?
Different nurse that
Thank
time.
Goodness.
Which part did you dread the most? Having done it once, going back to
standing up and holding your dick while someone pokes at your testicles with that was a very bad feeling.
That's terrible.
I don't know what it is, but that jelly sounds so horrible.
It was so cold too.
So horrible to me.
And like also like she's not. Like, no one's enjoying this.
No,
like, this
no
is bad.
One. She's not like, oh, I hope I get to poke a guy's balls
no, like,
today with
her
an
day to day is like, here's what your child looks like. Yeah. And I'm like, you have to sit in the dark with me for 30 minutes poking my balls.
Yeah.
And I'm very visibly uncomfortable.
Yeah. I didn't realize. So it's like an ultrasound technician nurse.
Yeah.
Is that, that's so
with
terrible.
And like, she was, I'm sure, but like the bedside manner was like, she gave no indication that this was rough.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. Good on
a joke, anything, because it was tense.
Yeah.
And then
so
that fucking door
funny.
Opened.
Right. And Bucket Lady.
Yeah.
Bucket
what
Lady had
doing?
The best
and
day
I do
of
feel
everyone.
Like she
yeah.
had the worst day. Like, I feel like she hit, like, whatever
yeah,
that bucket was
oh
for.
Oh my God.
That seems bad.
Yeah.
To not blink at the dude, like, like freaking out.
Yeah.
Focused on that
bucket. I need a bucket.
Eek.
Wow. I wonder what that bucket was for.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
Should we transition into a game now?
Let's play a game from
that story.
Yeah.
So this is a game we played. We've played a couple times on the show before. It's
so
called What's Shaken Baby? Syndrome.
Syndrome.
Named after Shaken Baby Syndrome.
Sure.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm gonna list off. Some different either some of them are syndromes, some of them are what's the word I'm looking for? It starts with a D.
Disorders.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Having a real real space.
You're looking
case
for the word there, disease, yeah. Are you?
No. Dyes. I think the dyes is the word I'm looking for. Disorders. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Disorders. Yes. So the first one is called. Oh, right. And so I'm going to ask the question, and then you and Madeline will confer. You'll come up with one answer together.
Okay.
And then we'll see how many you get right.
Rarely are. I think I have.
Do we confer off? We talk on mic.
Yeah, we talk on mic. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. How boring would it be?
Then you guys leave the room. Come back in 15 minutes. Okay. I'll
hold
it down.
We've never gotten it right, have we?
I mean, I'm pretty lenient, so maybe in that respect. Yeah. But
so you're
you
telling
never
us
gotten
the name, and we're guessing what the syndrome
okay, is. Okay. Yeah.
And a couple of these are maybe slightly on the easier side, knowing that I've given no one a chance to succeed in this game in the past. Right. There are certain games I like to give no one a chance to succeed.
Yeah.
This is not one of them. So this first one is called Bigorexia. What is bigorexia?
Bigorexia?
Can I have it as a spelling?
B-I-G. No, I thought about that before, that no one's ever asked that, and it's a good question.
It's a good question. You're already smarter than anyone who's come on this podcast.
Yeah. B-I-G-O-R-E-X-I-A. Bigorexia.
Bigorexia. Well, okay, so anorexia.
That's the only.
What's the root? What's the exia?
I can think of, right?
Yeah.
Can you think of anyone else? Anything else? I can't think of any other exias.
No, I can't think of any other exia.
Okay.
And what?
And so anorexia. I actually don't know. That's the. It's basically. Is that more of a body dysmorphia? Is that the definition of anorexia?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question.
Don't eat because of your. You have the wrong self-vision, right? Like,
yes. Yes, because I feel like people who are like starving because of other, I don't think I've ever heard anorexia applied to a situation where it wasn't linked to sort of the body dysmorphia or something. Yeah.
Bigorexia. Okay. Then I'm going to go on the opposite. Okay. I'm going to say it's the opposite of anorexia.
Where you...
And it's someone who thinks they are too thin, no matter what. Like, it's the other body dysmorphia. They think, okay, I'm unhealthily thin.
Okay.
And I need to put on weight.
Okay.
No matter what. That's my guess.
Yeah. I agree. I'm going to jump on board with that. I think that's... Great.
That is correct.
Is it really?
It's more. I mean, it's so close to correct that only a real dick. Only not a guy who wonders if people think he's a dick. A real dick would have to take that away.
Like Alex Ferguson, the classic dick.
So I would say, in terms of application, referring to it as the opposite of anorexia is the closest to pure accuracy. A subtype of body dysmorphic disorder.
Oh, wow.
Also known as muscle dysmorphia and sometimes reverse anorexia.
Oh,
wow.
With muscle dysmorphia, men become, sometimes females, but primarily men, become obsessed with the size of their muscles and have excessive concerns about appearing physically weak or underdeveloped. Which as I was thinking about it, it's like I think that there are a lot of people within our community that have sort of an offshoot of that kind of thing. The feeling that they're like, they're insufficient.
Yeah.
They have insufficient masculinity or whatever.
Good enough.
So those guys who do like the implant, they have those Popeye muscles.
Those big old,
There's a great deal of steroids, a great deal of implants. Yeah. And
the name is kind of on the nose.
It is.
I love the kind of name that's like because anorexia, I'm sure they're like the ano part is some kind of like Latin root for something. Yeah. And I love a name that's just a play on another name. Yeah. Just like, well, bigorexia. You want to be big?
Okay. Number two. What is reduplicative paramnesia? Reduplicative paramnesia.
Okay, I think it's
reduplicative.
I think it's when your memory misfunctions and you think you're in a loop.
You're in a loop?
Yeah.
Because the duplicative.
Yeah, it sounds like similar to amnesia where you're looping back through.
That sounds correct.
That's my guess.
Yeah, I would contribute something, but that sounds more correct than anything.
You are a very confident man.
Yeah, the way you said that, I was like, yes, of course. I remember that's in my like right
my 101 improv class, like the one thing that I was really good at was that thing where they say like they give you a term and then you have to explain that term as if you really know it. And I could nail that thing. And I never knew what the thing was. Not very smart, but very confident in my idiocy. It's pretty close, not exactly. So reduplicative paramnesia is the delusional belief that a place or location has been duplicated, existing in two or more. So so existing in two or more places simultaneously, or that it has been relocated to another site. The term reduplicative paramnesia was first used in 1903 by psychiatrist Arnold Pick to describe a condition in a patient with suspected Alzheimer's disease who insisted that she had been moved from Pick's city clinic to one she claimed looked identical but was in a familiar suburb. To explain the discrepancy, she further claimed that Pick and the medical staff worked at both locations. So it's similar to another one, where it's people, right?
Where you think that, like,
I was going to say, it sounds like that one where you're like, you're not my wife.
Yeah. Right, yes.
You just look exactly like her. You know everything she does, but I know I'm on to you.
Yeah.
And what was that one called?
I can't remember.
I think that was named after a person.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It has a person's name.
Yeah.
Okay. So you guys are off to a good start, though, with this.
Yeah.
Number three, hybristophilia. That's HYBRISTOP. HILIA, hybristophilia. Pronunciation possibly correct.
What is Bristow? All I can think of is the Bristol stool chart, which tells you what your poop means.
I don't know.
But
that
I think that's
chart.
Just the name of a person. Oh, it's great. You got to check it out.
I probably won't.
There's seven types. Fits into one type, and then you'll know, like, oh, I'm like eating enough fiber. Yeah, I'm not.
Still
or, oh, you could check it out. You could tell me what your poops look like.
Yeah,
I'll tell
you which
type.
Yeah, but you haven't said anything
type.
That would change my opinion. Hybristophilia.
Philia is an affinity for something, right? Like hydrophilia, right? Or necrophilia.
Well, necrophilia, but then so there's also, like, isn't like a hemophilia? Is that like?
Oh, yeah. What is
hemophilia?
Is that the same root? But that's like when you don't clot, right?
Yeah, but I guess it's because you want to clot. You don't clot enough.
Yeah, I guess we all want to clot. If you really boil it down, is the human condition is hoping your blood clots.
That's
probably a good point. Yeah.
Not clotting is actually my poop type.
Is it the same? Is like that the same when you're like a something philia?
I think it's more what you're saying, like necrophiliac.
Like yeah.
So hybristo, like
hybristophilia.
I don't know.
Yes.
So hybrid, maybe something with a hybrid. Hybristophilia.
Yeah, I don't know. This is gonna be a straight up guess.
Hybrid.
I don't know what bristo is. I think what would be a hybrid?
Is it something like it's like if something in your body doesn't like combine or like?
Yeah.
Is it? Are you going to give us a clue?
Sort of. Instead of thinking about Bristo, maybe think closer to hybris, which is not going to be an exact. That's not a real. But like, if you think sort of along the line of what a similar
hybris?
Word might mean,
hubris.
Yeah. There's some connection there, but not a great connection.
So when you're like, because some of these are mental disorder, so maybe
it's
like
mental disorder,
you think of yourself like you are. Compelled to think of yourself as like
I think it's you want to fuck yourself.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay.
That's my guess based on that clue. You want to fuck yourself.
The confidence with which you said that makes me agree.
I've never thought about that has to be something.
Yeah.
Right?
That
has to be
a mental disorder that someone actively wants to fuck themselves.
Yeah, that Zig, would you mind looking up specific? That's not the correct answer,
that's worth figuring out.
Just Google fuck yourself, please.
Disorder where you want to fuck yourself. Hybristophilia.
Hybristophilia, also known as Bonnie and Clyde syndrome.
Whoa.
A paraphilia in which sexual arousal is contingent upon being with a partner known to have committed an outrage, such as cheating. So that's interesting. So like basically hybris means outrage.
So someone who likes
outrage.
Drama.
Oh, I yeah,
basically
exactly.
just someone who really likes
and,
drama.
Yeah, and, like and so, you want a bad boy. Yeah.
So you get a combination of two. Well, yes, you want you want somebody who's probably not an ideal an emotionally supportive partner, yeah. meaning like a cheater or that kind of thing. But also, and more frequently, this applies to people that develop sexual arousal for criminals. In yeah. fact,
that's the most extreme.
Yeah. Or like that lady that married Charles Manson recently yeah. has hybristophilia.
Oh, yeah.
They say like the amount of fan mail that serial killers and serial rapists get in prison is overwhelming. They even said like that during the time of his life that I'm blanking on the name. Jeffrey Dahmer yeah. received more prison fan mail than anyone else in the prison.
More well, that's probably because he was also probably more famous than anyone in the prison, right?
For good reasons.
Like
yeah.
I don't know if like a lot of random prisoners are just getting
mainstream.
Prison fan mail.
I'm not that into that stuff. I like the more lesser known yeah. monsters.
Yeah, yeah, I like that.
Some like sort of indie killers. Yeah. Wait, but Zig, did you find out what it's called when you want to fuck yourself?
I have two.
Okay, here. Do you want to say? All right. Oh, it's catoptronophilia. Catoptronophilia is a paraphilia for mirrors.
Huh.
It may include activities such as having sex in front of mirrors, masturbating in front of mirrors, enacting other paraphilias in front of a mirror, having an orgy in front of a mirror, or enacting stripping fetishism in front of a mirror. Okay, so that's one. And then autoeroticism, sexual feeling arising without known external stimulation, or sexual gratification obtained solely through stimulation by oneself of one's own body.
I still bet there's something specific.
Yeah.
Like, I have a fantasy where I...
Where, like, I...
Clone myself and fuck myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, maybe
because that second one just sounded like masturbation.
Yeah, the second one just sounds like I prefer masturbation to sex.
Yeah.
And the first one just sounds like having mirrors around.
Yeah.
Like you could maybe attribute that to someone who likes being watched.
Yeah.
What is the disorder where you want to have? Wait, I'm just,
sex with yourself.
Where you want to clone yourself and have sex with yourself?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get
might get a hit on that.
Yeah.
Because it has to be.
Yeah.
It has to be a thing.
It has to be. And have.
Yeah, one of the things I was shocked by in doing this research was the number of like weird things that people had chosen not to research. Like that they were just like, I'll just leave that one alone.
Yeah, they were like, I don't want to interview a bunch of people who want to have sex with me.
Yeah. I was just reading something recently that people were passing around, but like how like little people study pedophilia and they just don't understand any of it. Like from a scientific standpoint, just because everyone's like, no, I don't want.
Yeah, everyone's like,
I don't want those people. Yeah.
This isn't. I have not found anything, but the
tough Google.
But the couple, but the items that come up are all pretty silly. There's something from Reddit that says someone asking if you clone yourself, then have sex with yourself, does that make you gay? Another Ask Reddit is if you clone yourself and have sex with said clone, is it incest or masturbation?
That's a good question.
Yeah. So, and then another article from good old Thought Catalog.
I love that Thought Catalog.
Asking if you had a clone, would you have sex with it?
Just laying it out.
Just laying it right out there.
And then what would you call yourself?
Yeah.
Okay. So, next one. You guys may have heard of this one. So,
The cold.
The cold, yes. The Koman cold. Synesthesia. What is synesthesia?
Oh.
Synesthesia. Synesthesia.
Is that where you see sounds?
I think that's
colors?
When your senses swap, right? So you can see and like smell, color, and that sort of, or that's how your brain perceives it?
Yes. Yeah. It's similar. Yeah. You guys both got this. A neurological phenomenon in which Stimulation of one sensory or cognitive pathway leads to automatic involuntary experiences in a second sensory or cognitive pathway. In one common form of synesthesia, known as grapheme color synesthesia or color graphemic synesthesia, letters or numbers are perceived as inherently colored.
Oh.
Synesthetic associations can occur in any combination in any number of senses or cognitive pathways. So I thought you guys might know that one. So the follow-up to that one is, what is mirror touch synesthesia?
That's when you want to have sex with yourself, right?
Why'd you make us go through all that?
Mirror touch.
So the answer is, you're a synesthesia. If you
mirror touch synesthesia.
Mirror touch synesthesia. Mm-hmm. When you touch, mirror touch, is it when, do you, like, so maybe it has to do with your sense of touch.
Yeah, I would assume.
And then when, it, like,
my guess, this might not fit with the synesthesia part.
Yeah.
My guess is, like, if I were to, like, do that, touch your hand, I would feel it as if you were touching my other hand. Like, I would, like, there's a vertices and like,
that's
literally,
that feels,
my sense of touch receives what I put out as well.
Yeah. That makes sense because it feels like that would have to do with, like, the lobes of your brain or something.
Like something.
Yeah, like something rewired. Like wires are crossed and,
unless there's something mirror, because mirror is a visual thing.
Oh.
So, like, you see something and you feel like you're touching it. Like, that would be my other pitch.
That seems like that would just be, like, visual touch. The mirror, Everything feels like a mirror. Everything feels cold and glassy. Yours sounds better.
We go with that?
Yeah.
Very, very close. I mean, to the point where I'll give you 80% on it. Basically, everything that you said is right in the sense that you touch her, but I would be the one who felt it, or Zig would feel it.
A third party.
So
we
just like,
hug, and you'd feel like,
exactly.
Oh,
I would feel like I was being hugged.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. So
that
I think that
is interesting.
And like many of these, nobody even knew that it existed until, like, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. And people had experienced it their entire lives. You just don't necessarily recognize that that's not something, that's not just like a heightened form of empathy, which to some extent it is.
Sure.
But
it's like that twin thing, right? Like,
yeah. So it's, yeah. So
but
you
this
see,
is just like a guy who's like, I can feel your hug.
You guys hug. Yeah. I'll be over here.
And they kept saying that it doesn't just apply to touch, but I couldn't make sense of it in other ways. Like, I couldn't imagine you eating a brownie and me tasting the brownie unless I'd had the brownie before.
Yeah, that, like, feels like that doesn't.
There is. No. I do feel like with synesthesia, that stuff, like, I'm sure there are many cases where it's terrible, but, like, every time I hear about it, I'm like, that doesn't sound terrible
to
me.
It sounds like what people describe when they are, like, eat mushrooms which I've never done, but I feel people are always like, whoa, it's the best.
Right, and I think, like, there's also taste that color.
Yeah.
I also think, like, there's, like, a version, like, and again, maybe this is just me, but I feel like there's an element of that all of our brains kind of do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where, like, so, like, sometimes, like bands, all is like, I will just somehow, like, color them in my mind.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it's not like I see them that way, but I'll be like, or comedians or improvisers, certain ones, I'll be like, yeah, for some reason I perceive that as purple and that as yellow or whatever. And I don't know why. I just tend to do that.
But, and I think it's why, like, color also, like, has such an impact on, like, your feeling about a thing. Or, like, you'll, like, see something or, like, put someone in a certain outfit, whatever, if, like, and you'll be like, oh, no, that's right.
Yeah.
And another one is, like, wrong, and you can't even explain why.
Yeah. So that's what's shaking baby syndrome.
That was really good.
Yeah, you did the best job anyone's ever done. I would say,
feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, no, you did excellent on that.
And if any of our listeners know what it is called when you want to have sex with a clone of yourself, let us know. Hashtag,
you are asking for trouble.
Yeah.
Putting that on the internet.
I know.
Tell us about wanting to.
Yeah, I know. If you know what that's called, hashtag mirror touch.
Or, you know, if you just think about how great it would be to have sex with yourself. Like, if you think,
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't have to be a clone. I guess it could just be like, oh man, I wish there was
two of me. Yeah. It has to be a thing.
It has to be.
Yeah. It doesn't feel healthy. Like it can't be.
No, absolutely not.
Can't want to know that person.
But don't be embarrassed. Let us know if it's you.
Yeah, let us know.
Don't be embarrassed.
Don't be embarrassed.
We've been judging it for 20 minutes.
Don't be embarrassed. If you're just like kind of like one of those sort of sickos, just let us know.
Let us know.
Real weird perv.
Yeah.
Do you want to plug anything?
Yeah.
Sure, you did at the top, but June 1st, Bajillion Dollar Properties, the third season, is on CISO.
Awesome. Great.
I don't know if it's all on streaming like at once or if they're going to spread it out. I have no idea.
That's a fun spoiler. A fun thing to find out for yourself. Yeah.
You might get 8 episodes, you might get one. But it's super fun, and obviously everybody in America has CISO, so it shouldn't be a problem to find it. And this season, like, Eugene Cordero's in the cast, and it's super fun.
That's great.
So check it out.
Cool.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks
for
having
me. This was a great time. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Ooh, lost it at the end.
Goodbye.
We always do. This has been Definitely Dying. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Definitely Dying.
Until next time, stay healthy.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.